Hi!
I'm Danny.
And I'm James. And welcome to
Let's Talk!
Oh, we are so excited to have you back for this episode. And we have a very special guest joining us today.
Ooh, drum roll.
Oh, it's Richard to the P. To the Peralta. Richard P. Peralta, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, we're so excited. How are you?
I'm great.
So for anyone who doesn't know how we record this, we record them in bits and bulks. Me and Danny get together in the darkest hours of the darkest months, and we come together and try and record when we can around our busy lives. And this is being recorded on a Sunday, so big up Rich for actually getting out of bed on a Sunday and doing this with us. We're so excited. So a little bit about you. I'll give you the basics and then you can expand on it, Rich, if that's all right.
Because James is the expert on you.
Yeah.
So, Richard is an actor, a writer based in Sheffield.
Yeah.
But you're all over the country. They're here, there, and everywhere. And we met doing Wendy and Peter Pan, didn't we?
Yes.
You were one of the incredible shadows. I'm just really lucky to know you, but you're sort of a font of knowledge when it comes to inclusiveness within the industry. And for those of you who haven't guessed, that's what this week's topic is. We are talking inclusiveness, inclusivity. So we're really excited to have Rich. But Rich, tell us a bit more about yourself.
Yeah. It's so weird to hear you say that I'm a fountain of knowledge in terms of inclusivity when really I've just been very passionate about it. A bit about me. I identify as Filipino American. So that makes me an immigrant here in the UK. I identify also as non-binary, specifically non-binary male. I am lowercase deaf, lowercase d deaf, and I am from working class background. I have learning difficulties, not disabilities, difficulties. There is a difference there. And so all of these things, plus more, I'm sure I forgot to mention, have contributed to my really interesting lived experience. So naturally, inclusivity is something that I've had to become aware of, learn about, but also learn how to talk about. And that's why I'm really excited that you invited me on today.
Honestly, we're so glad to have you. And everything that you've just said, let's unpack some of it, because I don't even know. Lowercase d deaf, what's the difference?
Wow, that could take a whole podcast on its own. But in short, I interpret lowercase d deaf as someone who is not part of a deaf culture, who is not part of a deaf community necessarily. They're not always accessible in certain parts of England, especially if you're in smaller villages or towns, but also who may not be born profoundly deaf. There are deaf spaces where I'm not deaf enough. I'm not deaf at all. I'm not welcome because I don't sign ASL or BSL fluently, or I maybe just knowing a few words has welcomed me. It's the safest label for myself that when I'm meeting other deaf people, they, you know, sort of make their own assumptions from.
That's so interesting, because for anyone listening that doesn't know my history with my eyes, so I am blind in one eye. In my right eye, I had a retinal detachment. I've had all sorts of eye issues. Again, I'd need to do a full podcast. Maybe we can do an eye and ear podcast together, Rich, at some point. But so I'm blind in my right eye, but because I've got perfect, well, I won't say perfect vision, but I've got 2020, can it be 2020 when it's one eye? I don't know. But I've definitely got good vision in my left eye. So actually, I can't really access any support for blind people. I'm not really welcomed at blind events or treated as though I am blind. But if I do cover my left eye, I cannot see a thing. So I really relate to that weird notion of not being deaf enough, not being blind, not being essentially disabled enough, which is, it's actually an awful thing, isn't it, really? But so we obviously like to bring this back to theatre and our experiences within theatre. And the biggest one for me with my eye is I have really bad light transition. So when I am in darkness, or when I'm in light and go to complete darkness, I'm essentially for about 20 seconds, I can't transition. Whereas normal eyes will adjust and go, oh, I'm here, I can make my way around. I'm completely lost. So when we're in blackout on stage, when it goes to blackout, especially if I'm looking out into the audience and then it goes blackout, me trying to get off stage is really funny. Danny, do you remember when we did Away in a Danger, when I went to sleep at the end of Act One in the thing, in the suitcase?
Yes.
I couldn't get off, so every day I'd try and stagger off, but sometimes the lights had come up for intermission and I'd still be on stage, like, tapping around. It was so bad.
Weren't there some entrances or exits in Wendy where you had to depend on, like, touching someone to make sure you went out the right wing? Or am I imagining that?
Do not out me on my own podcast. Do not do it. Yeah, there definitely was. Yeah, Callum and Rich Leeming were so good with me. They really helped me. Where I'm trying to think specifically, there's got to have been a, I feel like there really was like a someone dragging me off for something.
I feel like there was at least one or two bits where I'm like, James might need assistance with this.
Yeah.
Because remember, I was your understudy.
I've totally forgot that. And you did go on in the whole COVID drama gate. You went on for me, didn't you?
I got called for an early rehearsal, went in, then got my result as positive. So your understudy didn't get to go on. And we had to call someone from the 2013 cast to come in.
We did.
Oh my goodness.
Honestly, it was chaos. But yeah, this is it. It's being supportive and being there to sort of accommodate people's needs, and like you were saying, it's being aware of it. If you're aware of it, then actually hopefully as normal human beings we're a bit more empathetic about it, aren't we? So let's talk about a little bit more what it's like in 2022 for inclusiveness. Do you feel seen in spaces? Do you feel safe? Do you feel represented? What are your feelings?
That is a really good question. I think there are spaces where I feel safer, other spaces where I feel seen, and some spaces have not changed at all. So when I see tweets on social media trying to hold creatives and people in power or privilege accountable for what's quote-unquote actually changed, since discourse that's happened during lockdowns, I can't help but think, right, some people have just gone back to business. So I look more to those spaces where I feel safer and seen. It's almost like, this is the first time I'm admitting this out loud. It's almost as if those spaces that were already committed mm-hmm. to inclusivity and welcoming diversity have gotten better, where if spaces haven't, they're either not showing any receipts or they just still can't be bothered.
Yes.
That's so true. It's almost strange to see people getting away with things, even though they're overtly sort of prejudiced towards a certain group. But it's almost like everything's a fad. We get like movements like the Me Too movement, the Black Lives Matter movement. They were globally impactful, but then were 4, 5, 2, 3 years respectively down the line, and actually I don't see any Black Lives Matter posts. Maybe few and far between. Definitely not the uproar that we had around the George Floyd murders. For the Me Too movement, we're back to casting directors making overtly problematic tweets or being really inappropriate in casting calls and treating people completely inappropriately. So I do agree with that. It's kind of the people who went with the movement are making progress each and every year, and they are trying to actively be different. But then some people, yeah, they've kind of just been left by the wayside, haven't they, and allowed to fester in this sort of problematic pit.
I'm seeing more performative behavior than actual genuine interest in making change. That existed beforehand as well. I think I've never heard the term box ticking within the industry so much until I moved to England. And yeah, the fact that discourse was already happening when I decided to come back to the industry, I was like, oh, okay, this is where we are.
Yeah, so that's probably a really interesting point to talk about, Rich. So you were performing out in America, obviously, when you grew up. And then what made you stop?
Right. So I was one of those children that caught the bug. I was performing as much as I could. My parents were okay with it as a hobby. In fact, one summer we were in Disney World and I received a flyer. They were just passing them out to children, I guess, only to find out that it was for an audition for Mickey Mouse Club. The revival, lack of words, a reboot that included Britney Spears, Justin Timberlake, and so on. And so the fact that my timeline nearly crossed with that is a strange thing for me personally. But getting back to my point, I was that child, right? I was subscribed to storytelling, theater, film, television, went to uni in Chicago, and within my first year was told by an acting professor in one class in particular, that I could go to Broadway. I could go to New York. However, I would have to lose even more weight. I'd have to quote unquote find a way to deal with my deafness and essentially beat out every East and Southeast Asian person that's skinnier than me for the few roles available in Miss Saigon, Flower Drum Song, if there were to be a revival, as well as South Pacific. So this was after even Rent came out, and Rent for its time in the late 90s was a big example setter, for lack of terms, when it comes to diversity on stage. And so I left the industry in that first year of theater studies. In 2000, oh my gosh, I'm going to say it publicly, 2001, 2002. So I left the industry for well over 20 years before deciding to come back. And when I had to come back, I had to have a serious conversation with myself and ask, is it worth it? Can I manage this other flavor of racism and isms in the UK? And have I got it in me? And it took me telling myself, I have to honor what my soul needs and get back to storytelling. And what that comes with is accepting that I'm going to be in spaces where I don't feel safe, I don't feel seen, but also seeking people in places where I feel safe and having, you know, wonderful discourse like we're having right now. And getting the word out, and that's the only reason I'm able to come back.
Yeah, and well, honestly, thank you so much for saying that, because I think that's so important, and it actually reinforces what me and Danny want to do with this show. We literally just want to talk. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about what's going on, your experiences, because touching on what you said there, pairing East Asian and South Asian together as one category, how problematic's that in itself?
Yeah, actually, to clarify, and this is a wonderful new learning opportunity for you, James. I actually said earlier East and Southeast Asian, but you do bring up something very interesting, because here you'll hear specifically within the industry is EC, which is E-S-E-A, and that stands for East and Southeast Asian. So that does include the Southeast Asian countries, like the Philippines. Now, what I find interesting and very different than in the States is that South Asian, Indian, Pakistani, is kind of looped in as opposed to here. Primarily, and I'm guessing, because of the colonial background and the colonial history, that the impact on South Asia obviously is very different than what's happened in East and Southeast. All that being said, I'm finding it hard sometimes to connect with South Asian organizations within the industry as well, because they feel like there isn't a shared experience necessarily. And there isn't historically. However, nothing's going to change until we all start coming together.
As a wider community, yeah. I suppose when you link it back to the queer community, and when people bring up this argument about should straight people be playing queer characters and they don't have a shared experience. Actually, obviously, we want as many queer people playing queer characters, but if we're ostracizing straight cisgendered people from queer work, we're causing damage in itself. So there's got to be sort of that compromise, hasn't there, and that sharing of knowledge, sharing of experience, a bit like what we're doing now. Because, I mean, I don't know about Danny, but I definitely don't know anything about Southeast Asian work within the theatre industry. Are there any theatre groups based in the UK?
There aren't any that are still in existence that are strictly Southeast Asian. New Earth Theatre, formerly Yellow Earth, is committed to East and Southeast Asian theatre making and stories. So right now that is a home that we have. And there are other spaces that are specifically, say, Chinese. But in terms of Filipinos, it took lockdown for a lot of us to band together, and we created, how do I say this? I call it Pinx. It is P-I-N-X-Y, which is derivative of Pinoy, which is another term used to describe Filipino people. But we called it, or we're now Pinx Creatives UK. And so many of us in theater and now expanding into dance and film have started to create our own space, but we're not necessarily a registered organization yet. But going back to what you were saying, in terms of straight people playing queer characters, I think it's really interesting, because I have to ask, to what point does it matter? Yes, there are certain lived experiences that need to have been had to play certain roles. For example, if the character has been bullied and physically assaulted, not to traumatize someone again, to have that lived experience and then to channel it on screen or on stage is different than someone who never has. I know, and I'm obsessed with Heartstopper.
Yes.
And some people are questioning, you know, one of the leads and asking, what is his sexual orientation? Does it matter? Absolutely not. But at the same time, what would happen if he did share? You know, if he did share he was straight, would there be a backlash, even though his performance was well loved and appreciated?
And I think there'd be a real uproar, especially for Heartstopper, I think, because of the authentic casting. I don't know actors' names, so I won't go into people specifically, but each part in that show was created by Alice Osman with a specific ethnic heritage, a specific sexuality, a specific way of identifying in terms of gender. And she was, I think she was really vocal in making sure that those parts were ticked by the right actor. And I think they've pretty much done it. And whatever you say about, well, it's Kit, isn't it? Kit Connor, who plays Nick Nelson. So he's not come out as gay. He's not said he identifies as bisexual. But if you listen to the boy talk, he's what, 19, 18, 19. He sits and talks not only passionately about the character and the source material, but just about queerdom in general. And he talks so articulately and so passionately. I don't care if he's not bi. I really don't care. Because not only has he clearly done his research as an actor, he's played the part. And Heartstopper's, in my opinion, fundamentally one of the most important bits of queer media that will ever get released. Because this generation are going to have something that no generation's had before. We've not had a gay, bisexual, lesbian drama, whatever you want to call it, a queer drama that isn't sexual. There's nothing sexual about it. It's not about being like horrible nitty gritty, like being abused or being like beaten up. No one gets AIDS. No one dies. No one queer is having a bad time in that show. Beyond just life and exploring teen relationships. And I think that's so important that little queer kids, it's not for us, it's not for the 20 plus, it's for the teenagers who are trying to come to terms with themselves and they can see the self represented.
I secretly want to make that work, but with grown people, you know, I think there are adults that can have and experience that innocent love again, despite all the crazy stuff. But no, going back to what you were saying, yes, it is a golden nugget, if you will, for young people to have that example, to have those characters, to see them come to life right off the paper.
Yeah, massively.
I'm just loving listening. Like, it's just so fascinating hearing you both talking about it. And it's just a joy. And I think it, Heartstopper, it could be, yeah, I think, James, you're both kind of right. It's for the young people, but it's also for, you know, people who love, and like we all love. And that's just, I think what we're trying to do with this podcast is be like, let's all be kind, let's all be compassionate and listen to people, which is what I've been doing for the last 20 minutes. But, you know, it's just, I think that's how we can grow as individuals. And that's why, you know, there's certain, I would say, corporations in the arts aren't being inclusive in the way that is, you know, in a productive and useful way, because they're not actually listening. They're just acting and, like you say, ticking boxes. And that's not what inclusivity should be about. It should be about listening, and it should be about accepting. Now we're going to move on to our next section. Let's talk videos.
Woohoo! I'm really excited for these. So this week, our theme is, Danny?
Inclusivity. Richard, we're going to give you no explanation. We're just going to play the video.
Ballroom is about to be more popular than Studio 54 ever was.
We're about to go mainstream.
Put away your glass slippers,
Transarella.
It ain't never going to happen.
All right, it's all happening for us. Vogue has hit number one on the charts, and the
hey, baby.
Girl, what are you doing out here? You said you wasn't gonna walk the piers no more. There are more options out there.
Like what?
I got a plan. Get in.
Oh, you can vote.
Like, yeah, I like the new song.
I like that.
Y'all need to trust this mother's intuition.
Blanca made me audition for the Fresh Faces modeling competition.
Y'all are whistling past the graveyard.
Really?
Your T cells have fallen below 200. I'm gonna have to move your diagnosis of being HIV positive to having AIDS.
We are dying, and it's time that we fight.
I'm not posing for a mugshot.
Back to fight, back, fight AIDS.
It's so good. That was the trailer for Pose, I think it's season two that I picked in the end. I did think of all three. So for those of you who haven't watched Pose, have you guys watched Pose?
Yes.
No.
Rich is like, yes, of course I have. But Danny, you need to watch it. It's so it's an American series based, well, it's set initially in the 80s, then moves into the early 90s. And I've not actually watched season three, so I don't know how it ends. So I'm really excited.
Ooh, girl!
I don't think I'm emotionally ready. I watched It's a Sin, and then I was like, I can't physically
cope.
I just can't physically watch, commit to watching the end, or I'm gonna just cry myself into a puddle. But so Posey's based around the ballroom culture in the late 80s, early 90s in New York City in America, and it's the most trans billed actors in any show in history. It's predominantly black for their representation. They have industry legends like Patti LuPone, Billy Porter, Evan, American Horror Story, what's his name?
I'm always awful with names. This is why I always buy programs so I can try to learn them, but then forget them again.
Evan Peters?
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? It's Evan Peters. He's in it in the first season. But it's basically a story about family.
Wait, what was his name again?
Evan Peters.
Evan Peters. You know what? I'm really embarrassed. I should know this because we're from the same town.
Really?
Oh my goodness.
Fun fact. Yeah. Anyway, carry on.
You can't just drop a... Do you know him? Is there any link? Can we get in touch?
I've not crossed paths. I don't know him personally. I just know that we hail from the same city, along with other famous people. And I'm not one of those famous people. So.
Not yet. I love that, though. We talk about American cities like the really small, quaint British villages. Like, oh, you must have bumped into Evan Peters.
Yeah, and they're huge.
Giant. But yeah, so that was my video post season two, because it's one of the most inclusive casts, inclusive shows, and just all-round pieces of what I think modern inclusive television program should be. Let's see your video. I'm very excited.
Okie dokie. So I'm up for a debate on this video. I feel so much better. I'll be there on Monday, 9 o'clock. And we will see who wants the ball. No, no, I can't wait. I will be there at 8 when they unlock the door. Oh, oh, I'll even dress in black and white. See, I have not begun to fight. And you'll go much better. Much better. And soon on you're gonna go much better. I am so much better.
I am so much better.
I am so much better.
I am so much better
than before. And fade out.
And fade. Oh, Legally Blonde, Regent's Park, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So this, for those of you that are not watching along with us and just listening, this was the trailer, the What's on Stage trailer to Legally Blonde Revival at the Regent's Park Open Air Theatre 2022. This production is known for its incredibly diverse casting. So Courtney Bowman, who is playing Elle Woods, is a person of colour, and there are just so many amazing choices in the cast, but it's obviously in the UK got some backlash from some certain writers from The Guardian. No, not Guardian. Is it Guardian? The Times?
I can't remember.
Can't remember. We're great with
names. I think it was The Times.
Someone. And someone. I just wanted to open it up to the floor and discuss, because I haven't actually seen the production yet, but I have friends that have. And Lucy Moss has directed the show. She's the director / writer of Six, which is also a production known for diverse casting. And I just wanted to know, well, firstly, have you heard of like this production? I'm sure, James, you will have heard of this production, but
yeah.
This has been blowing up on Twitter and everything. But I just wanted to know what people's thoughts were on it and what whether you've read any of the backlash.
I read the backlash probably a day after the review came out, and I lost my mind. Here is a group of creatives trying to make the industry, the world better,
yeah,
for someone to not just come down hard on them, but use language that was, quite frankly, unnecessary.
Yeah.
It was just atrocious. If you read the review, they refer to people's weight. It's ludicrous and totally... It just evidenced the necessity for this version of the show to be out there, because it was just vile.
It brought me back to that experience in uni where I decided to leave, where I decided I don't belong here. And I'm sure that, is it Courtney Bowman? Maybe that's one name I got right today. I'm sure Courtney and her castmates may have had these thoughts before of, I don't fit in, I don't belong. But at the same time, I'm glad that they're cracking on, because there is space for us. The creatives have made space for us, and I'm about to keep carving more effing space for us. So yeah, good on them for carrying on, because that review is uncalled for.
Friends of mine that have been, I'm really excited to go. But friends of mine that have been have just said, it's just incredibly emotional to be in the theatre and watch such a, you know, just incredible people doing incredible things, really. I feel like I'm getting emotional now thinking about it.
What I love about both of these videos is that they're prime examples of people pushing the boundaries. They're not just actors, but also the creatives that are supporting it and behind these projects, trying to say, this needs to happen. These stories matter. These voices are valuable.
Yeah.
Because we all know that just seeing it, seeing the representation, validates any of the intersectionalities you may identify with on stage and screen. And it's why I've also chosen to come back to the industry, because I'm not here looking for fame. I know I'm probably not going to make any money, but I'm going to die putting these stories out there, giving people the representation they're looking for and they need.
Yeah, having left a message that's gonna be heard by people, even if it's not now. I mean, look at the amount of people that leave work and then it gets recognised after the passing. Like, the art world's a great example, isn't it? They always say that artists are never famous in their own lifetime. It's after, when they're gone, that they're recognised for the work.
You know what I watched the other day? Just because I had a couple hours to breathe from everything that I'm doing, and I just wanted to see it again, was I watched the film Beautiful Thing.
Oh, nice.
Which was originally a play by Jonathan Harvey. And even though it was supposed to take place in Liverpool and is in a different time, by the film, it took place, what, in the 90s? Late 90s? Early 90s? Or, I could be wrong. Anyway, the story still stands. The representation of working class people still stands. And queer people, albeit all white, it was still, I don't know, I still loved it. And I was like, if someday I could ever do this or maybe direct it, that's a story that keeps coming back, I think, or could keep coming back. If not, I'll selfishly cast all the castmates in something I write.
And we are fastly approaching the end of this episode. Can you believe it?
What?
I know. Me and Danny always think it goes so quick. We always finish Let's Talk videos because it's our favourite segment. And then we end up here and we're like, oh.
How did we get here?
But we are at the very end of our episode on Let's Talk Inclusivity. So let's talk our final thoughts and what we think about our best and worst examples of inclusiveness in theatre, film, radio, performance, whatever it is. We spoke about Pose and Legally Blonde in Let's Talk videos, so they're obviously really great examples. Has anyone got any? Have we got any bad examples of inclusiveness gone wrong?
Professional or not, it still happens. Like just the other month, there was a production of Kinky Boots with a white lead, and I see things for West Side Story as well that I'm like, it is 2022. This is the first thing you do out of lockdown. This is the first, even if it's Amdram, I'm like, why?
You're going to whitewash it. Fantastic.
Yeah.
No. I could go on for ages. I'm sure you both know this. But I can't let this conversation end without addressing something that I think is really important, that I think everyone needs to hear. And that is that our level of awareness, for lack of words, wokeness, can never be justified, never can be measured, aside from how... Richard, find your words.
It's so hard though, isn't it?
It is, because it's so complex. It's so complex and so deep, and it's rooted in so much colonialism as well. I would say to people listening, don't consider yourself woke unless those you've worked with can say that you've shown the receipts.
That's such a good thing. I've never thought about it like that.
Yeah, because like, it's not up to you to say I'm a woke person, you know, to say I am aware. I know who, as an educator, not just on decolonization, but diversity and inclusion, which I used to do in my previous life, even before coming back to the industry, there are people that I met that I'm like, oh, you actually don't get this. You actually don't get this. You say you do, and you could teach people what these vocabulary words mean, and you could play, you know, or you could do exercises with these educational groups and workshops, but you don't get it yourself. And so bringing it back to the industry, I had an experience with a producer slash director who was very, very vocal. Very vocal. I'm sure some of y'all, if you wanted to start digging, you could find out who it is. But they're very vocal and very proud of being someone who is inclusive in the industry. Only when it came time to rehearsal, my access needs weren't met as a person with multiple disabilities. And then I was blamed for it. As if the show couldn't go on because of my access needs. And a show that was actually meant to change thoughts and ideas on race.
It's almost like you're blindsided by your own ambition sometimes. I think people are so hell-bent on change and being part of, being inclusive, being part of that change, that they then forget, actually, well, you need to put it into practice now. You need to back your words up and actually have the facilities, have the measures in place to ensure that the people that you're casting have that support throughout the time. Like, it's all great casting someone who's profoundly deaf in a play, but have they got, like you were saying earlier, have they got ASL, BSL interpreters handy? Are the other cast able to sign? Can they communicate with this person, or are they going to feel ostracized and isolated joining your inclusive cast because you want to, like we were saying earlier, just because you want to tick boxes? I totally agree with that. What about you, Danny? Because me and Richard obviously have a very masculine approach to the inclusiveness that we feel, and especially from a queer standpoint as well, we've got quite a lot in common. But what about you and walking into an audition room, walking into a rehearsal as a woman? Do you feel included in things? Do you feel overlooked? for things?
Well, as a cisgendered, white, middle-class female...
Come through with the identifications.
There we go. I actually, I appreciate, you know, my privileged position. However, that doesn't mean that sexism isn't still a thing. And objectification and, you know, there's still a lot about image. And the Me Too movement was incredible, but it hasn't gone, it hasn't like trickled down into, like you were saying, Richard, there's certain people and certain organizations and companies that didn't change then and haven't changed now. And I've experienced a lot of, yeah, just less so in a casting situation, but more once you're in the room or like once you're on the show. I've worked with amazing people, but like at drama school, I had a lot of difficulties with certain directors, which I won't go into because I don't want to
get cancelled before we've even started.
Yeah, but it definitely still exists. However, I have worked with the most incredible women who are in the creative sense. So there a woman, Virginia, who's a director, and she has been working on a project about Mae West. I'm not really allowed to say too much about it. But we filmed a teaser trailer for a film that she's working on, like a hybrid documentary film about her. And I played Mae West. And a lot of people don't know, but Mae West was, she was like a Hollywood movie star. And she actually kind of rose to fame when she was in her 40s. But she wrote a lot of plays about drag queens, about trans people. And she wrote a play called The Drag. And it's an incredible play. If you haven't read it, go and read it. It's amazing. And there's a huge scene where all these drag queens who are Mae West's friends in the show are like all having... No, I don't know if they are Mae West's friends. She did a film as well where there's like a big drag party. And they're in the drag. There's a big scene where they all kind of have a bust up, and it's just incredible. So Virginia is trying to tell that story, but from the perspective of, you know, Mae West as a queer ally, and you know, really championing.
And my
those
God,
voices.
She was so good.
Yeah, and she also, like, in all of her films as well. If you look at the, I can't remember what film it is specifically, but all the music is by African Americans, and so she was kind of champion. She was very like ahead of her time, and I think not a lot of people know that about her, but that's the side that Virginia is trying to express to the world, because yeah, she's just amazing. So there's sexism, and then there's people like Virginia, so you know.
I think that's such a good point to kind of wrap things up on. I think there are those people out there that are stuck in the ways, like Richard was saying, where they've seen these movements happen around them and they've not really made an effort to change. But then there really are these people like Virginia who are creating work that they're really passionate about. Us, we're three people who, I know for a fact, we all write, we all want... We want to create these pieces that have lasting effects, like we were talking about Heartstopper earlier. If we can leave that little gem that helps anyone of any age at any point in their life, and if we can create something that gets someone thinking, maybe thinking differently, then I guess as creatives, we've done our job, haven't we?
Yes and no. I love what you just said. I think it's gorgeous, and I'm there with you. I think, yes, we all want to not necessarily leave our mark, but leave something that is special and meaningful to others.
Yeah.
But I think, yes, we can do that with our art. But what I appreciate most is when we do it for each other. When we do it for each other personally in our creative spaces. Because that is what's going to ultimately change things. And I know you're trying to wrap up. If I could add one more thing. Someone was telling me, I understand that you walk out of your door every day and you have a fear of physical or verbal hate that comes your way. And for the first time, they recognize that I have a long list of those things that I fear for. Danny, as a woman, as a white woman, I'm not going to make any presumptions, but I can presume that there are times where you walk out the door and you're like, as a woman, this is what could happen to me. For a black woman to do that, to walk out their door and say, as a black woman, more can happen to me.
Yeah.
And so for someone in a creative space to say, I understand right now that you're in a place where you're thinking of all of your intersectionalities, as a queer person, a non-binary male, as a brown person, as even an American, that validation and recognition has not only made the safe space, but really built my relationship with that other creative. And those relationships are what's going to inspire and empower everyone, and therefore make the art that we want to leave behind.
Honestly, what a perfect way to finish. Richard, it has been an absolute pleasure having you with us this week.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, just thank you for being so open with us. Thank you for joining us, everyone. Thank you for listening. As usual, join us next week. We will be back. And episode theme is Let's Talk Drama Schools. But for now, it's bye to Richard Pieperalter. Goodbye from me and goodbye from Danny.
Bye.